back home from D.C. on the road all day long. Dog tired and not sure if I got enough gas to get me through 3 hours, but we will certainly try. That's not me climbing up on the cross or anything. It's just reality. So, you know, if I can do an hour, I'll do an hour. If I can do 3 hours, I'll do 3 hours. But I am tired. Mercy sakes. And I'm tired because of what we've been doing. On Monday, we were on the House side and the Senate side of the Capitol in Washington, D.C. We went to learn, we learned that there would be a briefing regarding the effects of mountaintop removal on human health. We wanted to hear what the scientists had to say. You know, it's peer-reviewed, scientifically legitimate data that they have analyzed. And it was pretty scary what we heard. Then Tuesday and Wednesday, we spent going from traveling among a number of offices, telling other members of Congress about what we had heard about what is being done here in the hills and hollers of West by God, Virginia, as well as Eastern Kentucky, Western Virginia, and Eastern Tennessee. Truly, it is scary business. And I'll try to flesh some of that out for you as it becomes possible. Suffice to say, there is a very important number I learned. That number is 3,975. 3975. That is the number of hillbillies that it costs in order for mountaintop removal workers to be able to buy that new four-wheeler or those new bulbs for the tanning bed or that new above-ground pool in the backyard or new truck or whatever. You know, in other words, in order for mountaintop removers to have jobs removing mountains and casting poison in the form of liquids and solids in microparticulate dust down upon the people who innocently live beneath them, 3,975 West Virginians have to die. That's roughly one open grave for every mountaintop removal worker. It costs something like $18 billion for every $10 billion that the coal industry brings in. In other words, well, and even more than that, some could say that it costs $5 for every dollar coal brings to West Virginia. And those graves just don't just contain old folks at the end of life. Those graves contain children, babies, people in the prime of life trying to raise a family. The official and more scientific term is excess deaths. Those are deaths that would not have happened but for mountaintop removal. They are really, honestly, and for truly killing us. And they don't care as long as the check clears. And they don't ask us about whether we consent. We do not go to the altar promised a glorious afterlife in the home of warriors who have died honorably, as some ancient cultures believed. No, we are simply laid back over Cole's blood-soaked altar and had the life ripped out of us so that Don Blankenship or Kevin Crutchfield or any other number of coal executives can have more of the more money they already have than they know what to do with. And I don't know how. I'm not going to scream. I'm not going to carry on or cuss. But I'm going to tell you, I've had it. I am exhausted right now, but I am renewed in my determination not to go quietly. And I will beg everyone that I know around here not to go quietly. Because I have friends who have been those excess deaths. I have neighbors who have been those excess deaths. We here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, have been reduced to being a unit of currency. We speak of dollars. We speak of cents. Loonies like Ron and Rand Paul want to return to a gold standard or a silver standard when there is already a new species of currency in the market. Any artistic people are welcome to have a run at this. You remember the Beverly Hillbillies when Jethro would have a sign or whatever, and that kind of hillbilly script it was written in, the letters were kind of crooked and goofy looking? Take the capital letter H and let those be the two bars through the S of the dollar sign. Because really, we don't intend to be. No one asked us. But we are a unit of exchange now. Ancient peoples once used seashells as a unit of exchange. Other ancient peoples used cacao beans as a unit of exchange. But now we know scientifically that here in Appalachia, we ourselves are that unit of exchange. We have been commoditized, or at least our corpses have been. Think of that new unit of exchange as the hillbilly, hence the H with the dollar sign. It costs 3,975 hillbillies a year for about 4,000 mountaintop removal workers to have a job. Because those good-for-nothings didn't have enough gumption to finish high school. Or enough gumption to look around somewhere else in the world and find something to do besides poisoning people. From babies in the womb to elderly at the end of days and everyone in between. So they can have a job. Every mountaintop removal worker in this state every year gets to bury his own hillbilly so he can have a job. And I don't like it. And as I said, I refuse to go quietly. And I rather refuse to be that unit of currency. Some while back, we began talking about the possibility of a bumper sticker that says simply, they want it all. And now we know they don't just want all the money. They want us, too. our flesh, our blood, our bones in the dirt. They want it all. And we are included in the it that they want all of. May God, to the extent that anyone believes in him, may God damn each and every one of them for their homicidal desires. And it's nothing so graceless as simply coming up and putting a gun to someone's head. No, no, it's cancer. It's terrifying conversations in doctor's offices. It's respiratory disease. It's heart disease. It's rotten bowels and dying livers and burned up kidneys. And agony past agony, day in and day out. That is the cost. That is the sacrifice made for unholy profit in Central Appalachia. And that is what we are working to end. We're not working to end it 20 years from now. We don't have time for long-term organizing and circles, folks sitting around singing Kumbaya or deciding to form a committee to determine whether there should be a meet. We could get consensus on whether or not to have a meeting to determine whether or not we wanted to have lunch while we talk about them killing us. No, this is work that has to happen now. This is work that has to happen with intensity and desire and urgency. This ain't my paycheck. And doesn't need to be anyone else's either. This campaign, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, you can go to stoptheache.org. Aims to end this now, sooner rather than later, in the coming year. Because most of us have run out of 20 years to have. That's where we are. And that is why, for the last 3 days, I have been away from the microphone, and I humbly beg your indulgence in my absence. This was not a vacation. I think we got back to our seedy little motel room 40 miles outside Washington, D.C. last night at about 11:45. That was the end of a day that began about 5:30 in the morning. Got up, shower, dressed, commuted into D.C., and began hiking all over the Capitol, begging for support for a proposition that would tell coal companies that they had to stop killing us. Thus, I beg your indulgence in my absence. And I say that because I've been absent a lot lately, and I may be absent a lot in coming weeks and days. I know it's going to be a very busy May. It's going to be a very busy June. And nothing means more to me outside my family than this work that we have been engaged in roughly since 2003. And it's not going away. At least I hope it doesn't. As long as the contributions that keep the lights on and the computers computing and the streams streaming and the packets passing, this isn't going away. But I don't have it in place whereby I can get someone else to fill in, unless it's someone like John Fox, who has been busier than a toothless beaver lately in his own right, trying to keep all the plates spinning in the air in his world. So, yes, we will be right busy for a while. But I'll try to keep you posted when I'm going to be gone and give you as much forewarning as I possibly can. But this has to be done for a very simple reason. If not us, who? If not now, when? Because hillbillies have relied to one degree or another on having others fight their fight for them. It hasn't worked. We are, as they say, calling our own tune. And we will dance to the tunes we call and to no one else's. It's the only hope we have, because no one else is getting it done. We are doing this campaign on an absolute shoestring, kind of like how we run the network. The last frayed thread of a worn-out shoestring. That's why we're staying in motels where we basically have to bang on the walls at night and tell the cockroaches next door, and that's not a reference to other people. That's a reference to real life cockroaches, to, you know, keep it down in there. We have had some help, but not to the degree we truly need. We went with this fully formed plan and our little hats and our little hillbilly hands, and asked one of the big greens to support it. And they said they didn't think that they didn't really think that this was a good use of resources, trying to get coal companies to stop killing us to the tune of $3,975 a year. But that maybe that we can have a meeting about it in late April. It's not even late April. We've been working at this for 3 months and have accomplished amazing things. And we wouldn't have even done the first thing had we waited for that big green to decide that maybe the hillbillies could be trusted with their own destiny. So there you have it. That's how this is shaping up, and that's how this is working out. You know, they want to help as long as they can fundraise on it. They want to help as long as they can have control of it. They love them dancing hillbillies as long as they can tell them when to dance and when to get back in the damn truck. And none of that is any longer acceptable. If they decide to help later, good on them. We will certainly acknowledge their contribution. But the days of this and at least a few other hillbillies being told when to dance, how to dance, and when to get back on the truck and shut up are over. Because, see, if you get an office in old New York or San Francisco or somewhere, the coal company isn't killing you. And ending mountaintop removal is perhaps a little bit more of an esoteric concern than the existential one it is here where we breathe the filth. Just say it. So, that's where I've been. And where I was last night is an extension of some of that, really. Last night, I was very much privileged, and this wasn't an advocacy thing, this was an honoring thing. I was very much privileged to be at a reception in D.C., for the 2012 honorees of the Goldman Environmental Prize. It is incredibly impressive. The Goldman Environmental Prize honors six people from around the planet, one from each continent: Africa, Asia, Europe, South America, the island nations, and North America. And the people I learned about last night were absolutely both amazing and inspiring. Let me tell you a little bit about them. From Africa came Ikal Angeli. She's from Kenya. And she found out that a dam project in Ethiopia was going to lower Lake Turkana, which is one of the most profound lakes in a desert environment in the world. And it is literally the key to life for God knows how many human beings that depend on it. And she organized in the people among the people who live around that lake to stop her government from collaborating with the Ethiopian government in the destruction of her own people. And she is succeeding. Ikel Angeli has actually convinced some of the major banks in the world, the World Bank, the European Investment Bank, and the African Development Bank, to withdraw their considerations for financing of the Gibe III Dam. And it's stuck without financing. She even got her own parliament to act to save Lake Turkana. She was an ordinary person. Then there is Majun. Majun comes from mainland China. he began seeing the toxic effects of Western investment in the great labor camp that is the People's Republic of China, where more than 300 million people out of the billions who live there have no access whatsoever to clean drinking water. And he began calling them to task, these corporations. A great number of corporations. Walmart, Nike, GE, Coca-Cola, Siemens, Vodafone, H&M, Nike, Adidas, Sony, Unilever, Levi's, and Lenovo. And all of them are now participating with his group to begin to clean up their toxic act. One company refused to cooperate. Want to guess? Yeah, Apple. Apple told Ma Jun to F off him and the horse he rode in on. So he began a campaign called Poison Apple. To bring to light the fact that Apple would not document or even do appropriate oversight on its suppliers. It took a year and a half, but Apple gave in, and they are now participating as well as the other profiteers from the West who rely on the damn near slave labor conditions of China and poison that land at the same time. Then there is Sofia Gatica, a mother from Argentina. She lives in an area of Argentina. Argentina is the third largest exporter of soybeans on planet Earth. And the soybeans that they grow are genetically modified soybeans, and they are grown with the use of that little, those bottles of liquid hell on earth called Roundup. Brought to you by Monsanto. Sofia Gatica gave birth to a lovely baby, and the baby died 3 days later because its kidneys had already been destroyed by Monsanto. Monsanto wouldn't listen, her government wouldn't listen. And so she stood up herself, knowing neither where to go nor what to do, but knowing something had to happen, and began going door to door in her community to document the number of people who were being poisoned, just as the mountaintop removal industry is poisoning hillbillies here. To document the number of people being poisoned by Monsanto. She was threatened at gunpoint to get her to stop. She refused. In 2008, the president of Argentina ordered the Minister of Health to investigate the impact of pesticide use in Ms. Gatica's community, and also ordered up research that corroborated all the door-to-door work that she and the other mothers had done to document that poisoning. In her municipality, it is illegal now because of a municipal ordinance to spray these to use aerial spraying of these pesticides less than 2,500 meters from residences. The Supreme Court of Argentina ruled in 2010 that agrochemical spraying near populated areas was not only banned, but the court also said the burden of proof would be placed upon the poisoners to prove that they were not poisoning people. The winner from Europe, another mother, Evgenia Chirikova, who moved to a community north of Moscow known as the Himiki Forest, where there was a 2,500-acre parkland preserve that she wanted to have near for, as she raised her little family. They hiked, they skied in this forest, until one day they saw trees that had been marked with red spray paint for removal. That's when she found out that without so much as a kiss my butt, Vladimir Putin had the protected status of the forest revoked so that a massive highway linking St. Petersburg and Moscow could be driven right through one of those last remaining green spaces in Moscow's continuously growing proximity. And in a culture where raising a ruckus can be not only toxic, but deadly, she did so anyway. Again, her life was threatened. Her children's lives were threatened. Her entire family was threatened. She was arrested. She was intimidated. She was oppressed. But she did not stop. The company that was going to be doing the work to build the highway, by the way, was a French concern with which Vladimir Putin had more than cozy ties. But she did not stop. And now the European Bank of Reconstruction and Development, as well as the European Investment Bank, have withdrawn funding for this nightmare road. Then there's Father Edwin Garriguez of Mindoro, Philippines. Pastor to a small village on a hill, on a jungle hillside, on a paradise-like island that it turns out just happened to have a significant deposit of nickel under it. Having found out about the nickel, a Norwegian company by the name of Intex, back then it was known as Mindex, said, you know what? You know what we want to do? We want to open a giant open pit strip mine right there in your little corner of paradise. Is that okay with you peasants? Because if it's not, too damn bad. The Philippines actually had laws in place that prevented Intex from being able to do what it planned to do. But the Philippines also have a highly corrupt government. What corrupted the government? You already know the answer. Father Edu didn't think it was okay to poison his flock for money. So he became the co-founder of the Alliance Against Mining, made up of Mindoro residents who didn't want to be poisoned for a buck. And he brought together thousands of indigenous Filipinos. He, too, was threatened with violence. He, too, was verbally harassed. One of his dearest friends was outright murdered for standing up to these profit-driven monsters. But 10 years ago, as a result of his work, an island-wide moratorium was passed that made Intex stop any activities related to large-scale mining. Intex said, screw you, and kept going anyway. That's when Father Edu went to Norway and spoke to members of parliament there, as well as Intex shareholders, and then filed a complaint with the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. The shareholders decided that they weren't so crazy about the idea because it was getting just a little bit too hot for them. And Father Edu brought pressure to bear on the Filipino government. 3 years ago, he led an 11-day hunger strike until the Federal Department of Environmental and Natural Resources finally agreed to investigate the myriad violations of both environmental and social regulations that Intex had routinely perpetrated. And really, it really is a matter of round up the usual suspects. That's when Goldman Sachs said, you know, we don't want to be part of this anymore. We've been caught, and pulled their funding. That's when Intex tried to sell off what had become a $2.4 billion albatross around their necks in 2010. The sale was botched, and Intex's CEO quit the job. And the North American winner for this year is Caroline Cannon. She lives 200 miles above the Arctic Circle. Gee, 200 miles above the Arctic Circle. Who the hell would want to screw with them? Oil companies, baby. Oil companies. These are traditional indigenous. Hers is a traditional indigenous people. The Inupiats. They live on the shore of the Chukchi Sea in the Arctic Circle, and they live off of marine resources. They go whaling. That's how they continue to eat and live. And what became obvious to Caroline Cannon was that one good spill and the whole area, including the people who live there, are toast. And the tribal elders tasked her with teaching everyone in the group what was at stake. And she stands with her tribe behind her against one of the most powerful forces in the world, the oil industry, and its bought and paid for shills back here at home who say dirt ignorant things like, drill, baby, drill! And she took part in a federal lawsuit against an oil and gas development plan offshore of her home. And it was in 2009 when the United States when a federal court ruled that the leases, by the federal government no less, that the leases had failed to take into account the significant impacts of any potential drilling and the threat to the marine habitat and therefore the people up there. And she will not go quietly. On more than one occasion during the little films that preceded each individual's address, and during the addresses themselves, I got chills running up and down my spine, and the little hairs on the back of my neck and my arms stood up. Because with each one of these individuals, I realized that there was one common thread. Some spoke English, some did not speak English. Six different skin tones. Six different areas of the globe. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, probably eight different languages. But they had one thing in common, one thread. And that thread is this. They were each and every one of them humbly and quietly engaged in the day-to-day business of simply occupying space on this planet as best they could. And on a planet that seems as large as Earth certainly is, though no giant planet by any stretch of the imagination, and certainly overpopulated, but it turned out that with each one of these individuals' particular living groups, the space that they were occupying was inconvenient to a corporate predator. And that each one of these individuals and the groups with whom they are associated turned out to have something that corporations and their enabling shareholders desperately wanted. And the something that they wanted was everything. The something that they wanted was all. Their homes, their land, their water, their air, and their very lives. Because shareholder profits would go up as a result. And all six of these individuals, for motives that turned out to be quite similar, really, despite ethnic and language barriers, looked inside themselves and said no. The single strongest word in any language ever uttered by a human being. No. They said no for people for desert peoples drawing an existence from an amazing inland sea. They said no for a rainforest that had succored them and nurtured them for thousands of years. They said no for a pristine old-growth forest in the freezing reaches north of Moscow. They said no for the broad expanses of what had once been grasslands and had been transformed into toxic waste patches that grow up genetically modified soybeans. They said no in the name of the water of life. They said no, 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 no. I got to meet each one of them long enough to shake their hand and say simply, thank you. For though their motives may not have been for something as expansive as life on earth, though their motives may have been for a family or a dead child or a neighborhood or a tribe or an island or an ice floe, when they said no to the corporate profiteers and financial muggers, they said no for every human being of any decency and any spirit and any honor and any integrity who walks, has walked, or will walk the face of this little blue-green marble of a time machine hurtling through the universe. They said no. And what courage it takes, they said. And so that's how I spent my week. And I return home to a place that should be beautiful, but is instead latently laden with toxins and poisons and death itself. I come home and I say, so that's where we are. I'll try to make it through as much show as I possibly humanly can. If you want to call in, if you want to participate in the conversation, this is, after all, conversation radio. I thought letting you know where I've been would be at least worth a little bit of a filibuster. And thus, the previous preceding 50 minutes. You know how to reach the program, of course, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you wish to save us the money of the cost of a toll-free call, it's 304-658-3333. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be right back. Go out yonder, he's in the valley. Come downtown, that's a rumble in the alley. Oh, you don't know the shape I'm in. Has anybody seen my lady? This living alone would drive me crazy.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, so we'll get to hour two a little bit early. That's okay. Email rolling in from Ray. You do a great job when you're exhausted. Thanks, Rick. Well, it's been much on my mind the whole time. And, of course, you know, there's so much other stuff out there. And I hope I'm sure we'll probably get to. Texas Betsy, our blogger in the Horns Jewish Mother, says that it's important work. We understand. We can survive just fine. Schedule on the front page would help, though. Yes, nice Rabbi Hillel quote. I thought I came up with that. Dammit. Oh, I know. Schedule on the front page would be nice. Of course, you know, when I'm going to be gone, I really, really do try to spend time on the show itself every... Hey, I'm going to be gone! But, yeah. I'll try to do a better job of that. Indeed. Thanks, Betsy. And, our buddy Bill, including Levon Helm, passed away, 71 years old. One:30 this afternoon, he died in New York. Hence the entirely appropriate clip from the band, the track from the band there. Yeah, you're right, Bill. Rand and Ron Paul want to return to the Gilded Age as long as it's, you know, their geld. Oh, we do have some stupid to go into tonight. But after that filibobster, let's go to the phones instead. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay, wrong button. Let's try that. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
I'll tell you, you know, there's a reason Ferg does. You know, Ferg's not the only one that likes to hear you speak, and especially as eloquent as you are. And I mean, you know, we all know we all kind of stand here, I think, on religion in regards. But you know, there is this universe that we are drifting through, and
just passing through.
We often talk about, yeah, we're just passing through, and you know, we'll call it God, and you know, you're doing her work. You know, and so everybody maybe make a silent prayer every now and again, you know, to kind of clear the obstacles in front of you. Because what you're doing, how much more important, what's more important than what you're doing? I mean, here we start off, we're in this pristine land. All right, sure, there's volcanoes here and this and there. But
yeah, there's one in Mexico. I saw an absolutely stunning photo on the front page of the Washington Post today, Brother Albert. Ferg looked at it at first and said, Dad, that's not a photo, that's a painting. But no, that's the soft focus you get when volcanoes erupt. And it's Popocatapetl, Popo and Itzi. My Nahuatl is not what it ought to be.
Your Nahuatl's better than my Fofofluda.
Yeah, but at any rate, I love the caption on the photo.
Residents are being told not to panic, that there's nothing to see here. This is not the volcano droid you're looking for. Because, you know, they've been there for a few thousand years, and every now and then those volcanoes erupt and wipe out entire civilizations, and then, you know, you move on, but there's nowhere to really go, so, you know, pay no attention. This is just another day living next to a volcano.
You know, but that's also part about, you know, volcanoes, for as damaging as they are, you know, kind of, you know, they support life. You know, they replenish the soils, they, you know, and sometimes they help us, sometimes they hurt us, but it's nothing like us putting mercury, blowing up mountains and throwing mercury into the river, into the oceans, into everything, and acidifying the oceans, and, you know, on and so forth, putting glycophosphate in on the Amazon rainforest, for Christ's sakes. I mean, really?
Yeah, really? I know.
Really? I mean, seriously? What else can you say? You just gotta look at somebody, it's like someone walking around with their schlong hanging out at dinner. Really? Really? This is a wedding.
Yeah,
put that thing away. Come on, really? This isn't a frat party. You know, it's not a toga. You know, it's my girl's sweet 16. You know, if they make it that far. So that's why we support you. That's why we want you to do what you're doing. You know, as we all know, I mean, I have another one coming. I have my son, Leto the Magnificent, on his way. And he should be arriving around December, and, you know, that's worth fighting for. That's the future.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, my wife is pregnant, and, you know, I've been sitting here thinking, you know, I mean, you can be exhausted, but, man, when you're lit by a fire, by a righteous fire, not to get too, you know, I know it's not Wednesday, but we miss Wednesday.
Yeah, we can backtrack.
Yeah, a little bit, you know, we got to have our prayer Wednesday. So, you know, but not, you know, when you're filled with the truth, and with the light, and what we're supposed to be doing, you know, thinking ahead, you know, pray for people to start thinking ahead. That's a good thing to do. You know, when we sit here, when you're filled with this, I didn't get to sleep till 8 o'clock this morning. Charleston turning, you know, I mean, I got another one coming. What am I going to do? You know, today I went down to my community credit union, had a great talk with them, explained to them what I want to do. Now, you know, I don't know how to write grants and all that other stuff. I know how to make pizza. I know how to make food. I know how to talk, I know how to do this, but, you know, I don't understand all the ins and outs of everything. You know, hey, if anyone out there knows how to write grants, help me. But, you know, I'm going to try to do what I can where I can, you know. I'm not going to support any agriculture or any kind of crops in my pizza restaurant that's going to, you know, oh, you put Roundup on your crops? No, thank you. Oh, those are Monsanto seeds? Mm-mm. No, I'll buy my heirloom tomatoes. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to make the choice because... You know, that's another thing. Pray to the universe to end these sons of, like these, you know, Monsanto and so on. And you know what's really funny, too? Real quick.
Yeah.
ExxonMobil, they see the writing on the wall. They know that we're not always going to have cheap natural gas. And we all know natural gas is the most, you know, that's the one that they say is the most abundant of all the hydrocarbons we have, right? Natural gas, and I'm sure you know.
Well, no, that would be coal, Brother Albert. We got enough coal in West Virginia to last a million, billion, gajillion years.
Yeah, yeah.
Which apparently equals 15.
Yeah, 15. You know, and you're going to trade 4,000 lives for 4,000 lives. And when, you know, I'm sure some of them poor saps are going to pay the price themselves, aren't they?
Sure they are.
Their children are. You know, it's their children, too. They're cutting their own throat. You know, this is what I mean. You know, we learn a lot from the ants. The monkeys don't do this. The ants don't do this. The wasps don't do this. Nobody does this. No other life form, and the dolphins don't do this. You know, when you see amazing footage, like when dolphins will go into these shallow waters 5 feet deep where their tail can flick up the sand, and they'll corral a school of fish and go to the pyramid or that angle and wait for the fish to jump out right into their mouth. What is that? They're using the earth. They're using what they have. And that's smarts. I mean, yeah, all right, great. We can synthesize chemicals. We can make explosives. But, you know, what we are, and I just watched this, and if you haven't seen it, man, watch it. It's Rachel Maddow made that thing. It's on Netflix right now. It's called the McVeigh Tapes. Get a barf bag, but watch it. And you know what's really scary about that? Is he sounds like a freaking moderate compared to some of these bastards today.
Yeah, no kidding.
Really?
Hey, Albert, Since I'm a little punchy, let's have a little interlude here right quick. You mentioned that we can synthesize chemicals. You immediately made me think of a song I absolutely love and haven't heard for a while. Can we just take a little breather real quick? Stand by.
Sure.
Yeah, I think this will speak to you. I don't know if you've ever heard it.
Inside of me, all that guilt for all to see. Yes, I am a merry can, Normandy to Vietnam.
Isn't that something? That's Jason Ringenberg. You might remember the great band Jason and the Scorchers. That's him doing solo work. But we can bomb most any land. We're really good at killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're good at poisoning people. And we're good at making a buck from killing and poisoning people. But we're not so good at, you know, for all that right to life drivel that the right wing likes to talk about. We're not so good at that whole nurturing people thing.
Absolutely not. I mean, nose, bite, face. It's just that, it's constantly. Just to finish up on that McVeigh thing, you know, I'm going to tell you something maybe a lot of people don't even realize. He did that as suicide by cop.
Yeah.
That's why he did that. He knew he would get the death penalty. He did it and he went to make a little message. Because they're going to take our guns.
Yeah. They're coming to get our freedom.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to do exactly what's going to enable them, or am I going to do by not participating? You know, I can understand, you know, violence isn't ever going to solve anything. Well, it's not going to solve our issue. The only thing that's going to solve our issue is a change of heart and telling the truth. You know, and hoping that, you know, we're not sitting here looking over a smoldering ruin of civilization by the time the first monkey gets it, other than us. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, I understand there's politics and this and politics and that, you know, but 80% of world control is mental. It's mental. You know, and I think you embrace that. You walk the walk, Brother Bob. And that's very valuable. I mean, that's priceless. I wish I could do whatever I do whatever I can for you. And I wish I could do, you know, we got to hit that Powerball, Brother Bob.
That would be
nice.
Around
the universe. You know, I mean, but even without that, we're going to put our blood and we're going to put our flesh. And we're going to, you know, we're going to have to do that. Go, you know, put our bodies in the gear. You know, we're going to have to sit here and wake these people up. You know, I mean, this is waking up. This is, you know, waking up has nothing to do with a birth certificate or Kenya or anything, all this stupid crap like that. You know what waking up means. Waking up. Start being alive. Start being a human being. Start utilize your resources. You know, I mean, when I was at the credit union, I looked at this woman's plant that she had, and I could see it was nitrogen damage. You know, it was too much nitrogen. You know, and of course, these chemical fertilizers, it's not the soil. You know, it's just a temporary fix. It's fake sugar. It's not real. You know, this diet soft drink doesn't work for anybody. It doesn't. And you all know it. Everybody knows it. That stuff's not good for you. And talking about chemicals, you know, but same thing with these, you know, a plant. Look at a plant. Yeah, right. It can be all right. It can do all right if you put a little bit of, you know, extra fertilizer. All right, it'll be a little bit more green. But, man, you can kill it. You can kill a plant.
Yeah, well, you know, when Farmer Brown's the 6-year-old and 5-year-old children can't go out and play in the fields, because the ground is too toxic with Roundup, and they have to put a, you know, in the winter we say, now, honey, don't go outside without your boot and your galoshes and your snowsuit, you know, because it's cold outside and, you know, don't want you to get frostbitten or anything. But when you have to say, honey, don't go outside without putting on your hazmat suit.
Has your respirator filter been changed?
Yeah, right. And your 5- and 6-year-old are out playing in the yard, looking like extras from, from the crew of the Alien movies.
What's this? Throw the ball to me. I mean, for real? Really? Seriously? No. I refuse. And I'm not going to submit to it. And no one else listening to the horn is going to submit to it. Immediately. Listen. You know, this is the simple things, and I'm sure a lot of the members of the horn are aware of this kind of stuff, and maybe some live in apartments, but if you have a lawn, let those dandelions grow. Who cares if your neighbors spray? You let your dandelions grow.
Yeah, and if the neighbor's spray gets on you, get a little pissed off, because them dandelions will make you live to 95.
No, the bees need them.
Yeah.
We need the bees unless you want to eat.
Oh, by the way, you just got a note in from our dear friend Patty out there on the High Plains. She said, please tell Albert congrats from mine to his, and I can help him with grants, so send him this way. We love you, Bob. We love you more, Patty.
We love you, Patty. Thank you. See, and I had to put the hook out, and I appreciate that very much. I am kind of, you know, we are all treading water here, and the only way we're going to get to shore is by linking arms and kicking in unison. You know what I mean? I just that's real heartwarming to hear, and you know, and that's what I mean. You know, let your grass grow 5 inches. You know, what is it? Mowing our lawns accounts for 5% of our carbon dioxide, you know, contribution to the planet's atmosphere.
Yeah.
Don't mow it. Don't mow. Go to, you know, if you're going to go to Wally World, buy the right stuff. Don't go buy Roundup. Don't go buy Grub Killer. You know? What do you think eats grubs? Who do you think eats grubs? Robins. Robins eat grubs.
Yes. We like robins.
And you don't. Yeah, who doesn't like little feisty robins? They're so brave. And they're kind of like, are you going to come at me? All right, I'll stand here. I love a robin. So, you know, make a compost pile.
And that's because they eat their protein every day. Exactly.
You know, I mean, and children love to watch them. And they can learn a whole lot about life by watching the interaction of these things. Where do you think you get this, man? Who didn't spend hours watching an anthill? You know? And why? Because they're there and they can invade your picnic. You get a little ant on your donut and you're going to spray your whole yard with freaking nerve agents. Really? It's not going to do anything. I mean, I know...
Soldier, if I say it's safe to spray, it's safe to spray.
We all know better. We know that's not true. Everyone knows that's not true. Come on, right? No? You got to know that's not true. Can't you just tell that something's toxic? I mean, goodness gracious, everyone knows that, you know...
Why, high-fructose corn syrup taken in moderation is just as safe as sugar.
Hmm.
It's in your popsicle.
Yeah. Now, see, that's a real poison, because, you know, it's so sweet, you can't tell. It's like ricin, or, you know, it's a...
Antifreeze.
It builds up in you.
Sweet.
Mm. You know, I mean, but that's, the, I mean, it just, to imagine that we are, if we're sentient beings, to not acknowledge the web of life that keeps us standing, that's unconscionable to me. I don't understand. And you have to be walking dead to not see this connection. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, fundamental, a plant breathes out oxygen, and my girls will say, oh, so you mean, the plants breathe our breath, we breathe their breath?
Yes.
Yes, honey. Yes. That's how it works. Oh, that's so cool. Oh, that's cool. I'm going to breathe on plants. I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to da 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 da. You know? I mean, not, oh my God. Oh, F my parents. They didn't even get me an iPod 3.
Ned.
Really? Really? You need more David Attenborough in your life.
Yes, you
dumb
do.
Monkey. I mean, seriously. God. I mean, I don't know, you know, that's a positive. I'm trying, that's, you know, David Attenborough is a very positive force, so I'm trying to, you know, you know, what else are you going to say? Stop huffing paint or huffing gasoline? Come on, we can't keep insulting these people. You know, they don't even understand anything. You know, you got Alan West over here defending... You know, and Alan West was crazy. Like, he's defending Turd Nugget over there with his bows and arrows. You know, and for whatever discharge, you know, West got. And I'm not that familiar with him because I don't need this. I don't need anything more than his flat top, his salt and pepper flat top, and you know, a couple sentences out of his crazy mouth, and that's about all he contains in my mind. But really, West Nugget crapped himself for 30 days to not go to Vietnam. I mean, isn't there just something about that? I mean, even on a base primate level, that this guy was too cowardly, and he's talking all this smack about being dead or in jail.
That sort of cluelessness on the planet. I just got an email in from, I got an internet today, just got an email in from our buddy Andy, since you opened the door to the prayer meeting Wednesday that we missed, Andy wanted to go ahead and back up and open the door for more and Monday nominations too.
No.
And I got to give him this one. This actually, strange as it may sound, may actually top Ted Pantsload Nugent.
I'm gonna go sit.
Yeah, you might want to.
Thanks for the warning. Thanks for the warning, Brother Bob. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, I live to serve. But just a backstory, the Goldman reception last night was held in the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History. So I got to meet these amazing people within a context of the amazing world. And the centerpiece... Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you a question real quick. Just that we're on the museum, still on the museum. Was there much notice in the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History about the fact that we're in the sixth extinction event right now?
No.
Because when I was in the New York one, okay, all right. I just wanted to know. Thank you. Okay, continue, please. Sorry.
But the centerpiece of the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History, when you walk in, is this great, humongous, big elephant, you know, with tusks longer than I am tall.
Mm-hmm.
Standing there in, you know, full rampant, you know, mid-stride bugling elephantness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been there apparently for a long time, and it goes back to a time when we were much less enlightened about such things, but it is, after all, 2012, Albert. It's 2012. So
yes, sir.
Going out and getting one's jollies by blasting an elephant, in 2012, it's... You should be... Even if you are a member of royalty who aren't very smart because of all those years and years and decades and centuries and freaking millennia of inbreeding. Hey, sis! Spain still has a king. Juan Carlos. He's 74 years old. And being king of Spain, you know, there's all this austerity going around him, and it's not so much fun being king right now. You know, the king needed a vacation, Brother Albert. He needed a vacation. A little getaway. You know how it is. Sometimes the winter's been going too long, and you just get the urge to put the Jimmy Buffett on and run away to the Caribbean and drink drinks out of hollowed-out coconut shells with umbrellas in the top, right? Well, not if you're already a king.
Mm.
No, the king of Spain was bored. Bored, 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 bored. All those poor people out there complaining. I mean, what's the fun in being king if you have to listen to the peasants complain?
I mean, exactly. This is... Whatever, Willie.
Yeah, this is, you know, this is why there are guillotines. Because King Juan Carlos got bored.
Mm-hmm.
And said, go fetch me my elephant gun. I want to go to Botswana and kill an elephant.
No, really. That's when you're 74 and you're the king of Spain and you're tired of listening to the peons and the peasants complain about losing their social safety net. What you need to do is get on the royal jet and fly your royal ass to Botswana. Yeah. Hey, King Juan Carlos, your country is sliding into economic decay and misery and death. What are you going to do now? I'm going elephant hunting. And I hope to bring back some rich Corinthian leather. Hey. No, really. And the thing is, he was trying to keep it all secret. But he's 74 years old, and while he was in Africa blasting the elephant, which he did do, oh, it was so much fun. He blasted the elephant, but he also fell down. And when his Royal Highness fell on his royal ass, he hurt himself and had to be rushed home to Spain. At which point, the Spanish people said, "You went where?" And so now he is offering apologies. Let's see, what's the official? "I'm very sorry. I made a mistake. It won't happen again." Which part? Which part? Going swanning around having a holiday at all while your people are suffering? Or the shooting an elephant because you're bored part? And you know, Andy just said, "Your typical plutocratic pig. No respect for life on Earth as we know it. No respect for a just society. Can't we just get these plutocrats to leave and get out of our world?" There's a picture, and I can't see it because I don't get it. He said, "There's a picture of the dead elephant in the hard copy of the Financial Times. A magnificent creature slammed into a tree with the great white hunter in front of it that makes my blood boil." Is that just not the poster child for, you know, it's 2012 and we don't need anybody thinking they're any better than anybody else because they're royal? We don't need that anymore. That we're done.
Well, Donald Trump's son seems to think he is. Because, you know, he doesn't just get just elephants. You know, he gets leopards.
Oh, by the way, Michael wants to know whether Turd Nugget is one of your own. He said, "Somehow I don't think I've heard Turd Nugget before. Is that an Albertism? Or who coined that? Can I steal? Me likey."
Yes, certainly, certainly. Everything I say is open source. So take it and spread it. Just go. Go, spread it to the four corners. Please and thank you. I believe that is mine. Yeah.
And
a lot of forum posts and so on and so forth.
Kim also noting by email, she said, with regard to fertilizing and pesticiding one's lawn, she said, "A neighbor talked me out of using it years ago. They lived next door and had two handicapped boys who could only crawl through the grass. Up until then, I never thought that I was being poisonous to anyone or anything. Then I realized that my dog had frolicked in it for years, and he always had colitis. Never used it since. Love them dandelions." You know, I remember a story from a few years back where a guy went out to play, and I'll get the Jesus, I hate golf emails now. Some poor bastard had gone out to play a round of golf, and yes, he smoked. And so what'll happen is your golfer will have lit a cigarette or a cigar or whatever, and when he goes to line up his next shot, he'll toss his cigarette over in the grass and take his shot, put his club away, pick up the cigarette, and go on to the next shot. Well, this guy did that. And when he got home, he got terribly, terribly, terribly sick. And all the doctors, "What the hell's wrong with him? What is he breathing it? Is there any toxic waste next to his home?" No. And he was already dead by the time they figured out that the cigarette had landed in fertilizer for 18 holes of golf, and that he had then directly ingested it by placing it upon the mucous membranes of his mouth, at which point it had run right into his system and killed him. Dead.
I mean, you know, I mean, like, think of it like this, everyone. You know, speaking of these royalty that go out and, you know, shoot elephants, which, by the way, are a sentient being and can recognize themselves in a mirror.
And know the difference between them and the mirror.
And, Exactly. I mean, and if you haven't seen that IMAX about the elephants, my goodness, grab a box of tissues and watch it. It's one of the most incredible, I mean, when that mother's elephant, when her baby dies, oh my God, it's one of the most, I can almost cry just thinking about it. It's so heart, it just tears at your heart because you see that this is a sentient being that feels. And, I mean, this is an animal that can live for, I mean, it's a majestic animal, isn't it? Isn't it? I mean, you know, it's just, but anyway, yeah, that got me. Okay. But, you know, that's what these, you know, these royalty, you know, sitting there going out and killing these things. At the same time, they're doing it to us, too. You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
I did lose my
train of thought here, but, I was just thinking about that imagery. If you're familiar with it, oh, I got it back. But, if you're familiar with that imagery, you'll know how powerful it is when the mother is trying to lift her child, but the child's dead. I mean, hours and hours. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. But, you know, hey, plant some meadow. Go to Wally World and buy the seeds, the wildflower seeds, and just throw them all over your yard. And then mow a path, and you'll enjoy walking through your path. What do you need? The rich people are the ones with the lawns. Why are we emulating that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't think like that. Screw that crap. I don't like a lawn. It's a tedious chore, and it doesn't do anything. You know, I mean, and granted, there was probably a time in my life where I did like a nice green lawn to lay around in, and I do have that now. But you don't need, you know, man, if you got some land or you got some, plant some, let the wildflowers grow. Let them grow. Goodness gracious, let some life live in, around you, because you can't live in this toxic chemical wasteland. You know, that's what they literally call lawns a desert. There's nothing there. It's grass. It's like, you know, why do you think the panda evolved to eat nothing but bamboo? Because that's all that's there. And it's essentially just like, you know, honey, I shrunk the kids, but giant grass instead. Honey, I blew up the grass. Because that's what bamboo is, and that's what they eat. And that's all they eat. And we all know, you know, it's like they had a study regarding the dung beetles, and dung beetles prefer the corporeal emissions in terms of feces from omnivores, and, you know, and then carnivores, and then herbivores. You know, and it's like, well, of course. You know, we eat more energy dense food. You know, and sure we do need some sort of, you know, we do need some assistance here and there, but we should use common sense. You know, we should be using the sense that, you know, these companies, well, they're actually starting to do it. I mean, I think that's the other thing. There is that silver lining that companies themselves, you know, big companies like Siemens and other companies, you know, even like Exxon, like I was saying earlier. I mean, Exxon, just the fact that they're acknowledging that natural gas is not going to be cheap forever. You know, I mean, isn't that a huge step? I mean, that's just a huge step. That's like Timothy McVeigh saying, I'm sorry. You know, I mean, to me, it's not, yeah.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
No, I just said, oopsie, yeah, Timothy McVeigh. Oops. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't even say that. He didn't apologize.
No. Meant to.
You know.
Meant it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he was a filthy, ugh. I mean, it's just fresh in my mind, so.
Well, it is that day.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and I just spent several days explaining to people who knew nothing about mountaintop removal that what mountaintop removal means is that coal companies use the same toxic mix of chemicals that Timothy McVeigh used to blow up the Murrah Federal Building to blow up our homes and give us cancer and birth defects and respiratory and heart diseases and genitourinary diseases and burn up kidneys and eat up pancreas and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's why I thought about it, honestly. You know, that's why I thought about it. You know, and it's nothing more than, you know, some nitrogen and some oxygen and a little carbon and give it enough energy and, oh, because, you know, they prefer, those molecules prefer to be attached to another molecule. Boom! And you get that explosion, and next thing you know, you have headwaters with mercury parts per million in the 1% or solid percents, or, I mean, because that's, we all know that's deadly up to the, what, thousandth or millionth?
Yeah, and see, what happens when they set off these blasts, what we're finding out, is that the blasts release and drop in the form of itsy-bitsy micro-particulated aerosolized Well, first of all, it's all in sandstone, so it blows those into tiny little, imagine itsy-bitsy tiny little pieces of really sharp glass that your body cannot stop going into you. Well, that's one of the things you get to breathe when you live around mountaintop removal, Albert. The other thing you get to breathe, and this is really kinky sounding, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. Why, they're aromatic. They must be good for you. You know, aromatherapy, right? Wrong. Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. It's what's left over when all of the toxic goo doesn't burn that you set fire to. And it lands on things like your garden. And you plant your garden, and when you eat your tomatoes or your cauliflower or your squash or your beans, why, you're eating some polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons in that too. I mean, when they get to the point where they're poisoning your ground, I mean, that's really down into the level of rat effort, you know? And they're doing, but I deserve a job poisoning your dead ass. Uh-oh, I'm swearing. But that's the reality. And that's what we get, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and little tiny shards of glass in our lungs. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper?
It's a new level of depravity, you know? I mean, in its own regard, you know, it's not done out of racist or this or that, but, you know, the Nazis, I mean, and I know I'm not trying to invoke Goodman's Law or anything, but, you know, in turn, I'm just thinking of bad people, you know, that, you know, maybe they believe what they were doing. I can't say. But, that's what these people, I mean, I just see these similarities. I mean, and I know it's a stretch. I understand this, everyone, but I just, because I don't have the vocabulary to explain how goddamn evil that is. How twisted and sick and, you know, by not paying attention, to not realize that this is what you're doing, to do it out of ignorance and greed or whatever, you know, to not even understand to cut your face off to spite your nose.
Well, yeah, it's like the guy who shows up in the Argentinian lady's house with a revolver pointed at her saying, leave the soybeans alone.
And that's for McDonald's.
Third largest soybean exporter on planet Earth.
Stop eating McDonald's.
I mean, so what are all those soybeans going into? Yeah, I guess we feed some to the critters and the cows and the... But we also make tofu out of it, and we make soy baby formula out of it, and we make soy milk out of it. Mm-hmm. And every last soybean has been genetically modified to be able to thrive inside the little toxic moonscape that's created when you bathe the soil in Roundup and glyphosate.
And, I mean, I'll be honest, I shun any sort of soy anything. I did it out of manly reasons, to be honest.
Phytoestrogens, you mean?
Yeah, I was like, I don't need any more of those, then, you know. But that was my main reason. And the more I know, and the more you realize it, and this was actually a little bit before they actually had the genetically modified ones. And of course, you know, you see, GMO free in silk. You know, you'll sit there and you'll feel good about purchasing it because it says that on it. But when the Monsanto soybean field is right next to the non-GMO soybean field, and, you know, they do a little air mating, what do you think happens? I mean, we all know. I mean, these genes, the genes are out there. The genes, Jesus.
That's...
The genes were... isn't it worse than Bravo? It's worse than Castle Bravo. I mean, granted, that stuff has a half-life, so, you know, and some areas are going to be, you know, off-limits for 1,000 years, but, you know, it does dissipate. It does break down. This stuff is genes. Genes replicate for, oh, my God, are you crazy? I mean, imagine if radiation only got worse as it decays. I mean, that's what genes are like. You know, and once it gets in, when you're crossing genes from this thing to that thing to this thing, whatever happened to just good old-fashioned botany, where you'd grow 1,000 plants, test them, find the ones you like, take those seeds, find another group of 1,000.
Yeah, that went out with high-button Greaves.
doesn't that make sense? I mean,
well, it makes sense to everybody except those who want to make a nice, tidy quarterly profit off of the agony, misery, suffering, and death of other people.
So we're speaking in Braille. That's how we speak.
To them?
Our words are like Braille.
To them?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the only reason they know that that's...
Toilet water?
That is. Yeah. You mean, you want what? But what was that guy's name? That's Doctor. That guy was a doctor, by the way.
Yeah.
You mean like in the toilet? That was a doctor. What was his name? Oh, man, I forget. Anyway. Yeah, that's what we should call those business guys. I mean, that's essentially what it's like. And I mean, don't you have more to live for than money? Jesus, tell me the first person to live for 1,000 years. It's like, I don't understand how you can be so short-sighted that you can sit there and think to such a degree that as long as you have $60,000 for 20 years, it doesn't matter what you do because you're not here. And that's why I pray to the universe. Man, I can't wait for alien species to come down and give everybody just disperse some life extension molecule into the atmosphere, and all of a sudden, Bubba Joe is going to have to live once there's no coal anymore. He's going to have to sit here and live in this toxic waste soup. You know, that's like, that would be the...
You know what, Albert, I got to tell you, I don't think it would make a difference. Because it's, well, now I'm going to live by 1,000, and I don't want to freeze to death in the dark. I want to get all them 1,000 years in, but if we ain't got coal, we'll freeze to death in the dark.
Well, maybe they'll take the honorable way out then. You know, who knows? They'll get on a...
By the way, in regard to your the lawns and weeds and grass kind of the notes there, Albert, Artist just wrote in, our neighbors hate our wild weeds, Artist says.
I feel you.
They have called various authorities on us. When I spoke with the man from the city they had called about how they use lots of weed killer, he told me that it was not against the law to use that stuff. One of our dogs died of cancer. Yeah.
Sorry. It's just so infuriating. I mean, it's against the law. It's not against the law to spray nerve agents and hormone blockers, because that's what the glycophosphate is. It's a hormone blocker. A friend of mine is going, and he's going to get his PhD in biology, and he was telling me how what it does is it makes the plant mature super fast, so it ages them. It ages them, like, quicker than they can deal with, and they die.
You mean like the way that little human females are now developing their breasts at age 5?
Yes, just like that. I mean, and to think, I mean, I appreciate Artemis. I mean, I would like you to read the rest of it, but I just have to say this. I mean, to think that that's legal, but to not mow your lawn can get you a fine, a ticket. They could put lien on you because when they come and mow themselves.
Yep. Just to add a little bit of emphasis to what you were saying about glyphosate, it causes the death of human embryonic, placental, and umbilical cells on contact.
Mm.
Remember when they used to advertise household cleaning? Kills on contact.
Mm-hmm.
And the other stuff they were using on this woman's family, you know, because she happened to live near some genetically modified soybean fields, acres and acres and acres and acres, and they were using airplanes to put it on. Another poison called endosulfan. Now that's a highly toxic pesticide that's been banned in 80 countries because of what it does to humans. It's on the UN list of persistent organic pollutants to be eliminated worldwide. But see, there was a profit to be made, Brother Albert. Profit. And if that profit includes little 3-day-old babies with burned-up kidneys, well, you know, it's good for business.
Yeah. And they're down there in Colombia or wherever. Well, we own that land anyway because the government owes world. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that gets right-wingers so upset, because this was, in particular, this was Argentina. And they're part of that global south movement that's looking at the United States and going, hey, yeah, you, meh. You know, because that middle finger gesture is has worldwide significance. And so when the president of Argentina looked up and said, you know what, why don't we look at this? Why don't we study this? And then the rest of the country, no, we're not going to do this anymore. And the corporation said, what? Yeah. Yeesh. But, you know, it can be done. It can be done, Brother Albert. These bastards can be stopped.
Yes, sir. And, you know, the first way I help try to stop them is by not giving them my dollars. I mean, that's, what else can you do? I would rather go hungry.
And here's a little bit of not good news for you coming in from our buddy Isaac.
Thanks, Isaac.
Well, you know, we got to be aware of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I'm not mad at him.
No. You know, if we are going to awaken, we have to. This is how we know we're awake. The Environmental Protection Agency, you know, that the right wing says, oh, they're radicals and they're destroying our government and they're going to come for our guns. You know, all that.
Yeah, they're moving the goalposts.
Moving the gravestones.
Yeah.
Gallows humor. The Environmental Protection Agency has refused a petition that aimed to ban the sale of a powerful pesticide linked with cancer. And while already available, a surge in sales is expected as scientists ready a new crop resistant to the chemical. Not only has the EPA rejected a petition that sought to prohibit the domestic sale of the dangerous 2,4-D pesticide, a key ingredient in Agent Orange, mind you, but the main manufacturer of the chemical predicts that sales will skyrocket in the coming months. The reason, it would seem, is that Dow Chemicals, Better Living Through Chemistry, is awaiting federal approval of a genetically engineered crop they've created that will be resistant to 2,4-D. If approved, farmers will be able to plant the Franken-crop corn variant, oh great, corn, and douse their fields with the pesticide to eliminate unwanted weeds with greater success. Although 2,4-D isn't currently used to a large degree on corn fields, all that could soon change for the country's most successful crop. Opponents argue, though, that the potential side effects of the pesticide are enough to push for a ban on 2,4-D altogether. And our buddies at the Natural Resources Defense Council are doing their best. They're arguing that exposure to 2,4-D has caused, in some cases, cancer, hormone disruption. There was Albert with it before. Genetic mutations and neurotoxicity, reports the New York Times. In voting not to hear the petition against the pesticide, however, the EPA says that they believe, mind you, not that they know, they believe, there's that word, they believe there to be a lack of evidence that would be significant enough to raise suspicion.
Hang on. So, we can build a new species of plant life that can be resistant to this, that, this, and that, and another thing, but we can't make a machine, a combine, that harvests corn and beans at the same time and separates them.
Well, no, and we can't fly to the planet Uranus, neither. You're asking for the impossible, Brother Albert.
I mean, take the best of the old knowledge and utilize it.
Yeah, the three sisters, you know, corn, beans, squash. Plant them together. The squash eliminates the... But you can't drive a... Yeah.
Well, you can't. Well, maybe not this well. Then you have to walk out and pick up the squash yourself. You know.
Yeah, but then them Mexicans would want to come along and be a picking of our corn and our beans and our squash, and we can't have them Mexicans taking merkin jobs.
I'm not going to hear that. I'm not listening to that. That's bullshit.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Yeah, I'm not listening to it. I'm just going to juggernaut through it. And, you know, I mean, solar panels on every roof. Solar panels on every... I'm a broken record on some things that need to be broken records on. Solar panels on every roof. You know,
little vertical wind turbines.
That vertical MIT came out with a design that was 40% more efficient, you know, just by putting the solar panels in a straight line vertically. You know, they kind of stagger it and, you know, it looks like a... I don't know. Looks like a zigzag or a big... Yeah, looks like a zigzag.
Looks really cool.
But, you know, It is cool. You've seen it. You know what I'm talking about. You know, and this is the thing. It's like, makes sense. You know, don't... Why are we making new species just so you can put your chemical? Because there's no other reason to put your chemical other than the fact that you're building a species to put it on.
And what happens when it gets in the air and does some of that air mating with, say, an ancient 10,000-year-old species of corn, and suddenly we don't have that anymore?
Exactly. And that's what I mean, and that's why it angers me. When, you know, I understand a museum has to be a museum, but it angers me. You know, when a museum is a place... I mean, a museum is a solemn place. It's not just educational. It's a solemn place. This is history in a museum.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, you know? it's a repository of human hopes and dreams and ambitions, and in a way it's a time capsule.
Yeah, it's like a church in a way.
You know, what do you do when you stumble into it? 500, 750,000 years from now. Oh, look what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm crazy because I think that far down the road, I realize.
No, I think that far down the road.
But you know, you drive down the highway and you pass these poles and they've got the solar collectors on them and they drive the flashing lights, you know, reduced speed to 55 miles an hour, that kind of stuff. They drive the flashers and the street signs and all of that, and they light it. And they work. You know,
they do work.
That solar and that wind might be good, but, you know, 1,000 years from now. But right now, technology ain't ready. We need coal. We got to have our coal.
Yeah, because that's what the military's using, right? Coal?
Our nuclear carried. Very few people know that it's nuclear coal.
You know, I mean, coal has been useful to the species, and we appreciate it, but we know better ways now.
Well, yeah, and we do have, you know, we were talking about history a minute ago. We do have the lessons of history, and it was this one book simply called Coal that I read several years ago, a little narrow tome written by a former assistant attorney general of the state of Minnesota. And she said, or maybe it was Jared Diamond who said, that at roughly the same time in history, around 1,000 years ago, there were two great civilizations of roughly equal complexity. One was on the British Isles. The other was on the Yucatan Peninsula and the highland and lowland jungles of what is now Honduras, Guatemala, Belize. They had both been reliant upon wood for their energy. In the case of the Maya, they had no coal, and they wound up completely deforesting their entire region so that all their food sources, crops and everything, collapsed. And so did the culture, and so did the civilization. Because they had burned up all of their wood, not to cook food, but to burn and make lime so that they could plaster the pyramids to their gods. Well, the British had also deforested their island. But then they discovered coal. And coal kept that fledgling civilization from collapsing. And the thing is, it prevented a collapse, but if you continue to rely on it, you're going to use all of that too, and then we cycle back to, oh look, the culture is collapsing.
Yes, sir.
And that's the whole point. You know, maybe the point of the human learning curve must not be a curve. It should be an upslope.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it turns into a circle, then you're back at square one and you're eating dirt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I mean. That's why, you know, the loss of the Library of Alexandria was such a blow. You know, we don't even know what they knew. You know, we don't know what was lost. And that's pretty sad to me. And that's the thing. I mean, Rapa Nui.
Albert. Rapa Nui. You know what they had in that building? They had a Moai.
Yeah.
They had a Moai. Mm-hmm. I saw a Moai last night.
Mm.
And
did you I mean, I don't mean to interrupt too much, but did you happen to see a plaque saying how they went extinct?
Yes, that was there.
Oh, it was. Excellent.
Yeah.
The New Yorker has to catch up. That wasn't there in New York.
But I sat there looking at it, on the one hand going, I've always wanted to go to Easter Island and see these things. But look, there's one in the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History. And I just stood there looking at it, and it's, you know, it's very, very grim, very severe and serious, and his mouth kind of turned down like it's pissed off at me. Maybe it's not happy about being in a museum in D.C. But there was this little thing about how the natives thought that they harnessed the power of the old ones because all the Moais faced in toward the interior of the island to give them their spiritual powers. And I sat looking at that thing and I thought, damn, how could one thing like that completely wipe? How could your religious hang-ups completely wipe out your culture? And then I went, wait a minute. Meanwhile, outside the museum, just sitting out there in the weather, is an Olmec head. You know, one of those that the Eric Von Danikins of the world, look, he's wearing a space helmet.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's not. He's wearing a ball helmet from the ball court. Because we talked about that last week sometime, about how until the Spaniards carried some ball players from Mesoamerica over, that no one in Europe had ever seen anything bounce.
Mm-hmm.
Bounce was a word that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I've longed to see these things, and I just had this, oh, damn moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I immediately snapped a picture of the Olmec head, and I sent it to Agnes. And then I snapped a picture of mine, and so I sent her one that said Olmec head, and then I sent her a picture of me that said old man head. And I was doing my best, really grim, serious, because both the Olmec head and the Moai head were both going, you know, with the corners of their mouth turned down, with very unhappy people, very severe. Don't offend the gods. And
you saw where they went.
Right. That's the whole point. They're very grim. Don't enjoy anything.
We need a light heart.
Yeah, where's the giggling god?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we need a light heart.
Well, but we've got one, the god of irony. The only problem is the god of irony is out there somewhere in the universe slapping herself on the thigh going, I crack me up sometimes. Oh, I am a witty one.
Yeah, she is a Q, no doubt. She's a Q. The collective.
I know.
Yeah, Brother Bob. Yeah, Brother Bob. And, you know, I just, you know, you can't say it enough. We all know, you know, I don't know. I live and I continue to live for the long haul. And, you know, to not learn the mistakes of the past, I mean, that's just, there's no excuse for that, really. You know, and I'd love people to start taking a collective responsibility. You know? You know, I mean, you know, I'm tired of hearing people poo-poo solar technology and telling me it's not ready yet. And nothing infuriates me to a torrent of F-bombs and MFs and everything else that I certainly can unleash. And you know what, everybody, there's that study that cursing is good for you. It reduces stress. And I certainly probably have added 10 years to my life, you know, cursing. And, you know, but my kids, I'll tell you, you know, the future, there is great hope in the future. My girls, you know, and I'll be honest with you, I'm a lot more polite probably on the radio here than I am, you know, just when I'm speaking. And my girls, I ask my girls, I'm like, girls, why don't you curse? I mean, I can bring them down and they'll say exactly what I'm going to tell you. And they'll say, oh, because we're not made for that.
And
to me, that shows me in a sense. And I'll tell you, I speak to a lot of 18-year-olds and certainly 16-year-olds that thoroughly impress me. And we all know who we're talking about, Ferb. You know, and I mean, the future to me is so bright. The future to me is one of a higher level. And I think it's just, you know, we're the ones that have to till this soil. We're the ones that have to plow it up. Because if we plant these seeds of our future, we will reach Arrakis. We will reach, you know, we will be a multi-millennial culture. And, you know, because that's the real deal. I mean, we could sit here and play about what the score is right now for this or that team or this, you know. But reality here, if we're not here in 10,000 years, we've lost. That's the game.
I mean, on the big scoreboard of life on planet Earth, we got to be here for a couple of million years to be in the game, Brother Albert.
That's true. You know that. Absolutely. I think if we can, but the thing is if we're going the path that we're going with, all these chemicals, all this, I mean, you got to think 45% of the entire world's landmass that can be used as agriculture is being used as agriculture. We don't have anywhere else to farm crap. We're running out of room. And if we don't start doing this with an eye to long-term planning, you know, to what Cold River Mountain Watch is saying, you know, an eye on the future, you know, if we don't start acting and behaving in this way, we won't even be in the freaking semifinals. We won't even be close.
No, we won't won't make the field of 64.
No. I mean, geez, chimpanzees are still way ahead of us. Dolphins are way, way ahead of us. And ants... Ants don't even know we're here yet. They don't even acknowledge us other than our sugary donuts.
Yeah, you know, they made that Star Trek movie about the journey home where they came back to save the whale. And I guess that was an effective metaphor. I think it's octopi.
Yeah, cephalopods.
Yeah, yeah, you know, just sitting there on the bottom of the tank. Why are all, and meanwhile the stupid humans are, why are all the fish dying? Must be that shark. Well, we won't put any more fish in there, and we'll see how Mr. Shark thinks about it. Then they come in one morning, and the shark's gone. The octopus is sitting at the bottom of the aquarium going, me? What?
I'm a freaking octopus.
I mean, yeah, it couldn't be me, could it? And they set up the camera, and they watch the octopus mug the shark.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. You know, I mean, and it's to speak, you know, you spoke on the whale. I mean, cephalopods are super intelligent for what they are, for what we think they are. You know, but, you know, you think about a sperm whale.
Oh, swimming around going, I want calamari.
That's what they eat. I mean, and you think about it, I mean, just think about a sperm whale and what it looks like. You know, I mean, a freaking humpback whale eats more fish in one gulp than a sperm whale probably eats in its entire life. A sperm whale isn't designed to catch fish. It's designed to catch giant squid, an animal that we've only caught the most ghostly images of.
Well, you know, there's one in the Museum of Natural History. She's in a tank. She's very much real. But she was caught dead. It hasn't been caught. There hasn't been one caught alive. And, you know, that's why sperm whales have these, you know, really messed up faces. Because they have to, because it is not fun catching dinner when you're a sperm whale. Because those giant squids are mean and smart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's brains against brains in that one.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that is, it's probably the biggest interspecial battle of brains between us and soil. It's about the same magnitude in a way.
Yeah, and it's magnificent to contemplate.
But it's a world we don't see.
You know, and because we're humans and we don't see it, it's not there. You know, there was this one little blurb in the water part of the museum that said, Earth, and I read it twice, three times, maybe five, Albert, just to let it sink in. Earth is a water planet. You know, the very word Earth, soil, terra, dirt. It's what we're not. We're a water planet. Our very beings themselves are 97... Oh, Jesus, I almost started doing Captain Kirk there for a minute. 97% water. Our eyeballs are water. We are the creatures in James Cameron's The Abyss. You know, the ones that could shape-shift and everything at the bottom of the ocean that were so cool?
Mm-hmm.
We're them.
Yeah.
Only we're on dry land.
Mm-hmm.
And we walk around, you know, it's the two little fish and the big fish and the swims by it. Morning, boys. Water's nice this morning. What's this water he keeps talking about? Oh, we don't need no clean air or clean water. That's just regulations getting in the way of creating jobs. What's this air they keep talking about?
I mean, what else could you say except laugh? I see exactly the connection what you're talking about. I mean, you sit there and you can take seawater and just pull the microbes that live there, pull the zooplankton out of it and filter it and inject it directly into your bloodstream. I mean, it's got the same mineral content, saline content. It is essentially blood. That is your blood right there, the ocean. And, I mean, the disrespect we show the ocean, I don't even want to contemplate. I can't.
I come at all this from a human perspective. Mm-hmm. Because it's the only perspective I have. I'd love to come at it from the giant squid perspective, but I'm not a giant squid. I have to come at it from a humanist perspective, Albert. But I think it's enough. I think if we take an approach of save the baby humans, of protect the endangered hillbilly. Well, if we do that, we'll actually protect the stuff that they live on, and in and around too.
Yes, sir.
If we really understand what it means to save and protect. Mm. So, just saying. Albert, it has been a magnificent conversation, my brother. I'm so happy to hear about the addition to your tribe, and we wish your beloved and darling spouse all the happiness and health in the world. I mean, I told Agnes the other night about the coming blessed event, and she teared up, she laughed. I mean, she was thrilled, tickled. We have to do something, Bob. You know, I mean, she went into full-on member. You know, she gets all tribal, you know, mm-hmm. because another member of
That's
the tribe.
A member of our tribe.
Yeah,
our tribe.
Another member of our tribe is going to add mm-hmm. another member to the planet, and, you know, we want it to be great. Yeah. So it's beautiful to behold when that sort of thing happens.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I'm here.
And little Ito or little Chani or whoever he or she happens to be does not even know it, but even now is among one of the most fortunate people on the planet. Mm. And that is the truth.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Bob. You be good. We'll talk later.
Going to try.
I love you guys. All right, we'll talk later.
All right, take care, Brother Albert. All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, he's always got a lot on his mind, but now he gets to have a little bit extra. And it's the good kind of thing to have on one's mind. Lo and behold, we've made it through 2 hours of show. We will come back to your phone calls, lines open. One blinking if you're still there. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. And a little break, a little dedication for you, King Juan Carlos, here on the Horn.
Head-On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
6 minutes past the hour. Looks like we might actually make it through all 3 hours tonight. Yeah, I'm a little punchy, but what a magnificent conversation with Brother Albert. Line's open. Don't wait till the last 10 minutes of the program to call in, because then I wind up feeling bad. 877-443-2366 is the number. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial. If you will go to headonradionetwork.com and have a peep, you will find that we are halfway, roughly halfway, a little less than halfway to our monthly fundraising total. And we fell behind again because of my absence, of course. But and thanks for the three contributions that have come in the last 5 days or 4 days. Thank you very kindly. Appreciate you remembering that we still do have bills to pay. If you can help, we'd appreciate it if you would. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. And it'd be nice to actually reach the full halfway point at the halfway point of the month, because we have bills due by tomorrow that have to be paid or bad things happen. I'm just saying. 7 minutes past the hour, and hope you're still there. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, cool. Bill, how's it going?
It's okay, Bob. I'm glad that you hope. I hope you made accomplish something down there. It's so tough.
I think we are. We're making a racket, and ultimately we're going to make it impossible even for filthy pigs like Republicans to ignore what's going on here.
What you got? A baseball bat or what?
No, we're just armed with facts and reality. And absolute refusal to take no for an answer.
Well, that works. Sometimes, I hope.
And hopefully what we will do is we will set a course and create a template for other people who are being poisoned in this country to work in similar fashion.
Oh, you know, it's all over, man. I mean, I grew up when the wind shifted out of the south, Ohio had a plant that let me in on what they were doing. At least the olfactory part of it, anyway.
Yeah. And if you can smell it, that means you're breathing it.
Yeah. You know, we talked last time about Nominhan.
Yeah.
And how it pushed the Japanese into attacking south instead of the Russians. And I forgot the other important point.
Yes?
A guy named Richard Sorge. He was on the German staff in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
He was a spy for Uncle Joe, Stalin.
Oh, no kidding.
Stalin knew at that point the Japanese were not going to hit him. And what did he have to do in 41 in October? Reach into Siberia and pull out about 1 million men to come and stop Hitler.
Yep.
There's a second part to the same story that nobody knows nothing about. I had a talk the other night with a guy I hadn't talked to in 10 years. I grew up with him. And this guy is such a fascist. He's made money in his life. And mainly because he's one of the better liars I ever met. And he was going on me. He's calling me a liberal this and a liberal that. And he's quoting Limbaugh and standing up for Fox News. And, you know, Bob, I started thinking, remember the first time you met this guy in school? Yeah, on the way home from school, he got into your face and you beat the crap out of him. And I said, yeah, I remember doing that. And I said, boy, I tell you, it's a good thing he's not in my living room now. Because here's a kid who grew up on Social Security and the projects, and he's got this right-wing attitude. It's unbelievable. It's sickening.
Yeah. And you know, disabusing them of that ignorance, because, you know, well, I heard Rush Limbaugh say, oh, really? You heard a junkie say something? I can go down to the corner bar and hear him say all kinds of crap, but I don't believe any of it.
Well, this guy's got a master's degree in poli-sci. And how he made it through school was with the help of a lot of agencies. That's how he got through his bachelor's at John Carroll. And people forget, you know. I can't believe this guy. I wonder why I hadn't talked to him in all these years, and now I know why. Because he used to pull this out this stuff at dinner and ruin my dinner hour. How can they, I hit him with O'Reilly's line about the Malmedy massacre at the Battle of the Bulge when the SS killed about 100 Americans.
Right, the Americans did it. Yeah, we did it to the Germans.
Yeah, he reversed it. Yeah, yeah, O'Reilly reversed it. I said, how can you believe people like that? Well, I don't believe the commentators, but they give you the other facts. I mean, the news themselves. And I said, this guy...
Man, that's straight to the gin bottle material.
And this, well, believe me, how did you know what I drank when I was active in the music business?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, if you're a, you sing blues, you play blues, yeah, drink that gin, man, that's good for you.
Well, it's the elixir.
And congratulations to Albert. That's...
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
The older I get, the more I enjoy watching good people have children, you know? Because I only had one, and she passed away a couple years ago.
Oh.
I never raised her anyhow. Her mother was a little rich girl from a part of Cleveland. What the hell? She was running around with a guy who was still half of a greaser in those days, you know, with the spit shine floor shines, buddy. Because then I started hanging with
you. Yeah, but, you know, you blasted away on a mean harp, and sometimes that's irresistible.
Yeah, well, them let it work. I don't know. That did help. The guys actually told me that... One guy told me he always loved when I played at his club that he chose because every time you work here, I get laid. I said, oh, good for you, you know. Where's my percentage, you know? But I won't keep it because I just wanted to touch on that. There's so many other things happening, pulling the chicken inspectors off the line. Isn't that wonderful?
Oh, please. Oh.
See, now I know why they don't let kids read The Jungle anymore.
Oh, no, that's probably... I'm sure some school board would declare it to be heretical or pornographic or creeping communism or... Right, yeah.
Because actually, in the other part...
Because I actually had to read it when I was in high school. I had a teacher who said, thou shalt, and I did.
Well, that and Grapes of Wrath were almost mandatory. Because people don't get
it. Yeah, but see, that's class warfare, Bill.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Because not wanting to starve to death is un-American. We need to support our corporations with the very, very, with our very beings, and if corporate America needs us to die, well, that's just like dying for your country.
Well, and you hear Romney talking about getting rid of HUD. Yeah, I live in a senior citizen building, or as I usually call it, a senile citizen building, but I have a nasty sense of humor about some of my neighbors, you know, what can I tell you?
Well, that dumb bastard Romney, he is so desperate for support. Did you catch this one story, Bill? He's going to deliver the commencement address at Jerry Falwell University.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Next stop, Bob Jones.
Yeah, the same thing that, who pulled the Bob Jones thing in the Republican primary in 2000?
Oh, wasn't that W?
Yeah,
or was it Pat? They all beat a hot path for the endorsement. But, yeah, Romney, who is despised by evangelicals because, you know, he's a member of a cult, they say. Of course, they're all cults, but we know that, and they don't. He's going to go and talk to him about God and family and conservative family values there at Liberty University, and they'll just clap and be so happy because he's going to talk about, I'm sure he's going to talk about preserving marriage. As a marriage between one man and one woman, or three, or four, or nine, or 12, like his great granddaddy had.
Well, that's a real masochist that can take more than one at a time. I don't know.
See, you're going to get in trouble, or you're going to get me in trouble. I mean,
hey, at my age, when it comes to that stuff, I destroyed my own first marriage by being. Well, you know what it's like for band leaders and people on stages, and the sexual revolution was beginning to start moving. And being a real patriot, unlike Nugent, I volunteered for the sexual revolution, you know. Get in there and
right.
Do my part. Man, there's another guy that I can't, you know, I can't stand him as a guitar player.
Yeah, he's just not a lot there.
No, I guess I...
And no, and let us, and let it be understood that when Bill from Cleveland, Mr. Stress, says, I can't stand him as a guitar player, this is, you're saying that having heard and been around and even on stage with some of the, a lot of the real greats.
Yeah,
I mean, and I don't, you know, I'm not necessarily saying this as self-promotion, but people deserve to know you know, who you've played with, who you've backed, who you've been with, and it won't bother me a dime's worth if you list a few of them. Because I think you mentioned a Mr. Clapton last time.
Yeah, we worked the Grandy Ballroom in Detroit. We opened for Clapton. It was just them and us. And we didn't get thrown off the stage. And, you know, I've done a lot of work with a lot of people. James Cotton, I've done a lot of work with him. I worked with Sam Lay, who was drummed for Muddy and Wolf, and, of course, Paul Butterfield and his first. And he was a tremendous guy to work with. It was a time and a place, again, Bob. You know what it is? So much of everything is a time and a place. If you know, I often say I was like, I think I wrote to you the first time, I said, like Forrest Gump, I'm standing around doing nothing, and something goes by around right next to you, you know. It's just the whole thing. It's like this guy Zimmerman. I did detective agency work in the 60s and some security work when I needed to wait for my dental work to be fixed so I could get back to playing. And, you know, we were taught, observe and report. Stay out of it unless it's, you know, you don't get involved in everything you see. And this guy, the talking around that thing where people just automate. And my buddy says, well, you weren't there and I wasn't there. I said, yeah, but I know what they teach people in these block watches. And he was no more of a block watch captain than call me general of the freaking army. If he was a captain of anything. It's just people buy this crap and believe it. And I hate to say this, but so many of my friends that I've been around all my life, because the current president had a black father, it's like, you know, that's the whole problem. I wish it was that was his biggest problem, you know, but it's not. And he's pretty heavily backed by the banksters himself.
Well, yeah.
I can't predict winners, but I can usually tell you who's going to lose an election. The public, the citizens, are generally the losers of it, not the...
Bill, you just said a mouthful.
Well, they control the nomination process. It's like my feeling about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I played there when this woman brought her local book out. And, hell, I played Blossom here in Cleveland, so I've done most of the big joints. But in all honesty, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is built on record sales in so many cases. And you were part of the business, you know, working for...
Sales can be easily manipulated.
You got it. And if nobody hears you, it's not like an athlete. An athlete from high school through college, records of their performances are kept.
Yeah.
Not sales, it's performance. That's why the Rock Hall of Fame is rather dubious to me. Because if nobody knows you know, you don't.
Well, and there's even some personality conflicts that are in there. I forget who it is that's on the nominating panel that has a real hard on against an act, and I can't remember what the act is, Bill. But you know, they ain't getting in. I mean, Shoeless Joe Jackson has a better chance of getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame than this band does,
exactly.
Into the Rock and Roll Hall.
Well, you know, their companies used to control the distributorship, and that was it. You know, I have a capital contract in my collection of stuff. They sent me in 69, and I had the audacity to say, well, gee, you going to send me a producer? Well, how come there's no guarantee of release on this? And they were offering a 7% of the wholesale cost split amongst five musicians and a manager. There's a way to get rich if there ever was one. And, you know, it's just the business is what it is. I like to recommend reading. There's a book called Hitmen. But the one I really loved was called Stiffed. It was a story of the cutout record business and how it's manipulated.
Oh, wow, the cutout bin. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing I like to tell people in this country that maybe don't read a lot of them, like you and I know the Civil War pretty well. And there's a book that McPherson wrote, Battle Cry of Freedom.
Yeah.
And I tell people, read the political section. Forget General such and such. Forget battles. Just read that political section and watch the country slide into the abyss. And I hate to say this, but I'm afraid we're sliding now.
Well, and I got struck by that sense as well. Yesterday, after we got done with our meetings, we had a couple of hours to kill before we could They'd let us into the museum there for the reception. So, you know, not wanting to spend any money and not wanting to do any superfluous running around, we were up there on Capitol Hill, and Vernon and I looked at each other and said, well, you know what the heck, let's go through the Capitol Visitor Center. It's free. And we did. And it's beautiful. It's all underneath the Capitol. It is magnificent. And there's an exhibit hall that explains the history of the Capitol. You know, it's funny, all their little three-dimensional tiny architectural models, White House ain't even in it, and that was deliberate. The White House doesn't exist in that exhibit.
Oh, boy.
But there's, and, you know, that was the one that they threw a hissy about until they put, them heathen liberals are trying to take God out of our exhibit. And so now the little place where a video plays about the history of the Capitol has an In God We Trust over it. You know, just like it's money or something.
See, Bob, that's another thing where you and I are on the same block of ice, is this idea that these people are really stepping up and taking over.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, it breaks the exhibits break the history of the Capitol down into chunks that are kind of digestible from the very beginning up until the present. And to watch them, and part of the exhibit, they had a Civil War exhibit that showed the petition book. And my God, it was huge, Bill. And back in the late 1830s to the mid-1840s, and I'm sure you know about this, the Congress had a standing rule called the gag rule.
Yeah.
And they kept a book of the massive volume of petitions that would come in to the Congress demanding that slavery be ended. And they passed a rule saying that no one could so much as speak about it. And when they got a petition, they noted that they'd gotten a petition, they saved the petition, and they put a notation in the book, you know, received. And the damn thing's that, oh, heavenly days, it's thicker than a Gutenberg Bible, I think. But they were forbidden on the floor from raising the issue of slavery because they just couldn't agree about it, and the Southerners didn't like it. And they have behind glass an actual handwritten motion done by John Quincy Adams objecting to the gag rule. Because back then, when you wanted a bill, you got your little piece of parchment out and you dipped your quill in your ink and you wrote yourself a bill and passed it around and had it read and people voted on it. And, of course, that was shot right down. Another one of those beautiful little trivial pieces that I learned, inside the Capitol Visitor Center is the actual full-scale plaster model of the Statue of Freedom that tops the pinnacle of the Capitol Dome. And there is some history about it around there, and one of which is that when the statue was proposed, and, you know, it's another one of those beautiful women, she's got a shield in one hand and a sword in the other, and she's in a toga, and she got a hat on. And the sculptor originally presented drawings of her wearing a liberty cap. And a liberty cap was something that both new Americans during the Revolution and Frenchmen during the Revolution wore as a sign of their revolution. But the design had to be altered on the objection of then Secretary of War, I bet you know who he was.
Davis.
Jefferson Davis, that the symbol of our freedom would be wearing a liberty cap, and he said, it is insulting for this statue to be wearing a liberty cap as symbolism of a people who are already born free. So away went the liberty cap to appease another bigoted, racist, slave-owning freak.
Well, the best thing about Davis was, in my book, was the choices he made of Brest and Bragg and Hood to command the Army of Tennessee were the best things he ever did for the Union.
Yeah, right. It inured to the Union's benefit, no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah, buddies of his. You know, that buddy system stuff can get you in trouble in so many areas. The other stuff that I've read two books a couple of years, within the last 2 years. One was called the day Freedom died, which was based on the Colfax massacre in Louisiana, and another one about Ethelbert Ames, who was the son-in-law of the corrupt Benjamin, what was his name, old Doughface, the guy from New Orleans, Ben, yeah, I can't think of his name.
Yeah, you got it.
Well, you just when you said the Liberty Cap deal and the cross and the flag and the shield, the name came back to me that I've been trying to think of for 2 days, the guy that published the cross and the flag, Gerald L.K. Smith, that Henry Ford put money into. To some woman I worked with in the 60s gave me copies of this stuff. I couldn't believe it. It was so religious right-wing fanaticism. That shit's been around for too long. And I've got, you know, I was raised, I spent some time in a Roman Catholic, wonderful children's home. And, man, I have such problems with religion as, thank God we didn't have priests like these guys today. Those guys were too busy drinking beer to be bothering with the kids. They would, I don't know, well, my dad was a musician and he had a buddy who used to come up to Erie, PA when my dad would play there. And this guy come up in a suit and tie and meet some young woman and God bless him. If there is one, because at least if he was doing anything, he was with adults. And, you know, nothing wrong with that in my book.
But lo and behold, now, and it was Texas Betsy who showed it to me. Lo and behold, there's a trial going on in Philly. They're trying to criminally prosecute, you know, one of these vile kitty-diddling priests. And testimony was adduced in which it was repeated that the current sitting bishop of the Diocese of Charleston-Wheeling, West Virginia, had raped a boy. And so a subpoena was issued. And instead of honoring the subpoena as you and I would have to, the church demanded of the federal government via the court in Wheeling to show cause why the subpoena should be honored. Can you imagine that, Bill?
Oh, God's sake. I mean, I hate to use that.
Issued a press release saying, this is just a case of the government persecuting the church.
Yeah, they're using that constantly. Everybody, well, I don't care, you fill in
no, the persecution is when you get fed to a wild animal or when you get turned into a living street lamp by Nero. That's persecution.
Yeah.
Being asked nicely to obey the laws of this nation ain't persecution by a long shot,
no.
Bill. It's just not. But once again, you know, we are dealing with an insurgent church that thinks itself, as it has proven in this case, above the law because they've been caught raping little boys again. And the difference is that while other dioceses have paid out millions for their kitty raping problem, the Diocese of Philadelphia is still flush. They got lots of money and they don't want to part with any of it. And they have been protected by a cardinal and an archbishop and a knight and a rook and a pawn and a queen, whatever. And have the nerve to say, well, you know, we don't care what you want to do. We're the church. You know, we'll damn your soul to hell. And apparently there's a federal judge in Wheeling who takes that crap seriously instead of actually upholding the Constitution of the United States. It's revolting. Bill.
That's the thing that scares the hell out of me because so many morons believe in it.
Well, this crap was supposed to have been settled 500 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. This, you know, it's like Nugent. He said he'll
be dead or in jail, and my only thought was, we get a choice? Because if we get a choice, I know how I'm voting.
You exactly where I was going to go. I was going to say, do I get to vote on this? That was my reaction to it exactly. You and I, a couple of sick-minded individuals in our own way. Yeah, but because that guy, I couldn't believe. I saw too many clips of him. I couldn't believe.
Well, see, it's bad enough that, you know, this business with the National Rifle Association, okay. But, see, I remember something about Uncle Ted, as he calls himself, Michael has renamed him Turd Nugget.
Yeah, that's a good name.
I remember when he showed up at the I Love America Labor Day rally hosted by Don Blankenship, who was wearing a giant American flag shirt on a giant jumbotron on a, in a, at a, at a big free party that he gave his knuckle walking minions on top of a toxic mountaintop removal site a few years ago. And Ted got up there and talked about how coal is so important.
There's an old lady in this building older than me, and I was talking to her, and she's from West Virginia, and she's telling me her dad died in a mine. And she could see the change here when she mentioned it. And I remember how I felt. I was a supporter of John L. Lewis through my youth, and you know, because of, and the movie Mate One brought out a lot in me. But, you know, it's like Albert says, the time is done. We've got to move on. And I told my buddy the other day, I'm talking to him, and I said, what was the shortage of oil? Oh, no, there isn't. Well, why are they digging it out of the tar sands? And the other thing is our fellow citizens think that if it's mined here, we get it here. Yeah, we get it all right, but it's not quite the same. Well, we get the
stuff. Well, no, but we don't get it here. But, you know, the stuff that's coming out of these mountains in Appalachia is getting on a boat in Norfolk. It's getting on a boat in... oh, Jesus, where? Philly or whatever. It's getting on boats in New Orleans and the west coast of Mexico, and it's going to China, and it's going to India, and it's going to Russia.
What the hell are the Russians buying it for?
Because they've got a burgeoning steel industry just like India and China do. And the more metallurgical coal they buy from the United States, the more they indirectly make sure that the American steel industry just finally dies.
Yeah, if they want to kill that, yeah. Yeah, that's... And that's the thing about my buddy I was talking to. His father died mysteriously coming up from the steel mills, and we always thought it was a heart attack. And I'm talking to him a couple last week, and I said, well, what about your dad, Dad? I said, you're perfectly healthy at age, he'll be 69. He still played basketball and never smoked. He drank a little bit, quite a bit. But anyway, make a long story short, he says, nah, the story that he got from his older relatives when he was older was that his father was a union organizer in the mill. And union organizers, you know what that was like.
Oh, sure.
Ruther and a guy named Frankenstein, the Harry Bennett's boys caught him up on some overpass in Detroit and beat the crap out of him. Yeah, labor organization was pretty violent in our day.
Well, you know, to be a labor organizer in a certain time period in American history was basically to say that you were suicidal and or just had a general death wish.
Yeah. And see, people don't know this. I don't know. My buddy of mine, I keep telling him to listen to you because he's leaning toward the direction we lean in. He's a retired history social studies teacher in Lake County, Ohio, which is one east of me. And I lived for like 15 years myself. But he said that he has watched the teaching go downhill. And he's been teaching for some 40-some years. But he says the teaching of our history and political history...
Absolutely, it has gone downhill. And, you know, that's part and parcel of why Dr. Bill is so adamant about trying to get American history teachers back into the business of teaching American history and not teaching what some Hart Reinholt and R.J. Reynolds company history text says, or not teaching what McGraw-Hill says, but teaching instead from primary sources.
Yeah.
Because that changes everything, Bill.
There's so many things you learn, Bob, that you begin to get... It's like the Demyanyuk situation. When Israel let him go... I said, well, I actually had good things to say about their government over there. But that poor guy, when he was growing up in the Ukraine in the early 30s, most people don't know that Stalin had pushed in a famine. It's so heavy duty that one Ukrainian buddy of mine, they have a name for it that is a Ukrainian word, a name that would be similar to Holocaust. And then Demyanyuk goes in and gets drafted. And he's a POW where 3 million Russian POW died in Hitler's camps. And I don't know, I mean, whether somebody said to me, you can either guard these people or you can die, I don't know how strong my morality is. Who does until you're faced with it?
Well, and you know, that's the issue, that's the same issue that in many ways that Stephen Crane addressed in The Red Badge of Courage.
Yeah.
Yep. You don't know what you'll do till you see the elephant.
Well,
there's the elephants again. It's an elephant night, I guess.
Well, I tried enlisting in the Army in 61. I was 18 and wanted to learn electronics, and they said, no, we don't need you. There's no war on. And boy, 65 or 6, they're calling me back. We can change your... No, you can't. I guess it's time to... I'm as good as... I can stop a bullet as well as the next guy. But forget it, anything else, you know.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that, and I saw a lot of my friends during that era, and that's my... I have a beef. These guys were all against the Vietnam War because a lot of them were against going. They didn't... There was so many other good reasons. Let's start with the good American nationalistic reason. What the hell were we going to get out of it? What the hell good was it going to do this country? Was there anything that you could show me that was good for us as citizens? I mean, in World War II is a different story. Somebody had to step up against Hitler. He would have lasted maybe 50 years, but God Almighty, 50 years of that guy in Europe, holy Jesus.
No, that's uncontemplated.
Well, anyway, I'll let you go because probably a lot of folks want to talk. And hang in there. You did a hell of a filibuster, Matt. It was there, and you're right. And I don't know what the rest of us. I'm standing near the freeway exit right now, as far as life goes, as far as years. And based on, you know, if you want to know, look at your family, you know. And that's what the doctor used to tell me. Well, look at the folks that came before you. I said, ain't none of them around anymore. I don't know, you know. Anyhow, hang in, buddy.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you. And you too. Take care. Bye now. That's our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. He is an amazing soul. It's about 23 minutes before the hour. And Bill mentioned Hitler. And, of course, we also talked about Turd Nugget. I'm looking at a photo here of three idiots and two of them wearing cowboy hats. One of them's Turd Nugget. One of the idiots who's not wearing a cowboy hat is Mussolini, you know, Godzilla from Wasilla. And to her immediate right, my left in the photograph, is a guy who looks like he's making some sort of chimpanzee noise from the look on his face. His hat and his coat match. They're both brown. And his name is John Racy. Now, I want you to understand something before I go into this. His opponent, his almost certain opponent in the general election in this state, will be a man by the name of Joe Manchin. Because John Racy is ostensibly a West Virginian, although he spends most of his time, you know, he's kind of like Elmer J. Fudd. You remember the episode where Elmer says, "My name is Elmer J. Fudd, millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht." Well, John Racy, I don't know if he's got the yacht, but he's damn sure got the mansion. It's either on the Georgia coast or the South Carolina coast or the Florida coast or somewhere that ain't West Virginia where he's not breathing little itsy-bitsy, scanning electron microscopically small pieces of silica dust that are shaped a lot like jagged broken glass that you just can't help but breathe when you live here. He don't live here. But nonetheless, he's going to run as a repig-licking for the Senate seat that was most recently occupied by Senator Robert Byrd and has been occupied by Senator Blanche Manchin for the last couple of years. And so I want to make sure that in talking about what a godforsaken, absolute, undeniable, no two ways around it, ain't going to be able to get around it idiot John Racy is, this should be in no wise construed as any form of endorsement of Blanche Manchin. You know, Blanche, who likes to vote with Republicans more than he likes to vote with Democrats. Blanche, who won't acknowledge the existence of the peer-reviewed studies that we've been working to tell people about on Capitol Hill. No, this is not an endorsement of Blanche. This is to let you know what it's like to participate in electoral politics in the state of almost level West by God, Virginia. I will, and point of fact, be leaving that ballot empty. None of the above will be my vote in November of 2012. Because I refuse to vote for somebody who is okay with killing me, or what's worse, the people that I love and hold most dear. And that applies to both Blanche Manchin and John Racy. And I will tell you that, as you know, I'm a smoker. I wish I wasn't. I'm actually working on not being one. But Bill brought up Hitler. And, you know, we talk a lot about history on this program, and sometimes it is inescapable to mention terrifying things from our historic past, like the rise of a madman like Adolf Hitler. And sometimes we see historical parallels where it's impossible not to note, they did it, look here. But when we do it, we try to do it with a real eye for history. It's not like when the frothy mixture Rick Santorum, for instance, says that, you know, Democrats are Nazis. No, we don't make that kind of statement here. I don't generally refer to anyone as Nazis, unless they're, you know, Nazis, because there still are. Enter John Racy. He's one of these guys that has enough to burn an entire herd of sopping wet elephants with $100 bills. There's the elephant again. This is the elephant program, Thursday, April the 19th. And he's running for Senate. He's a pal of Turd Nugget. You know, he's been palling around with Mussolini. And I want to make sure I pick the right word here. Sometimes word choice can be so important. John Racy is an idiot. Yes, an idiot. The true blue, four square, washed in the blood, dyed in the wool, idiot. Probably wears shoes with Velcro tabs because he's baffled by shoelaces. Idiot. And so he went down to Putnam County, which is just immediately to the west of Kanawha County, which is the seat of state government, because they were having their Lincoln Day dinner not too long back. And he is theoretically from Monongalia County. No, I did not just mispronounce Monongahela. That's the name of the river. When the people were incorporating their county through which that river flows, they sent an illiterate who couldn't spell Monongahela and spelled it Monongalia, M-O-N-O-N-G-A-L-I-A, instead. I'm not kidding. It's history. We have to deal with it. So he goes to this Lincoln Day dinner because they're going to honor the father of the Republican Party, you know, their patron saint of the Republican Party. And John Racy's all head up about how we're losing our freedoms. Because, you know, that one, you know, in our White House is going to send us off the Obama re-education camps or something. So he wants to make sure he gets in real good with them Putnam County re-pig lickings. And he says, I don't want government telling me what I can do and what I can't do, because I'm an American. Yeah, because America is just, it's total anarchy out there. Ain't nobody can tell you what to do nor not do. John Racy, by God, is an American, and he can stand in the middle of Main Street and spit all the way to the sidewalk, and if it don't land there the first time, he can hockey up another loogie and shoot for it the second time around. And when if it lands on the sidewalk next to a police beat off, a beat cop's feet, well, he's just that free. I don't want government telling me what I can do and what I can't do, because I'm an American. But in Monongalia County, you can't smoke a cigarette. You can't smoke a cigar. You can't do anything. truly, this man in this quote is giving us the measure of his mind. You can't smoke a cigarette. You can't smoke a cigar. You can't do anything. Yeah, you can't jaywalk or stream litter or the burn out of season. Ah, you can't smoke a cigarette. You can't smoke a cigar. You can't do anything. And I oppose that, not being able to do anything. I have to put a huge sticker on my buildings to say that this is a smoke-free environment. This is brought to you by the government of Monongalia County. Okay? Remember, Hitler used to put a Star of David on everybody's lapel. Remember that? Same thing. No, really. It's probably a little late in the program for the phone calls or anything, so somebody will refer to it on the program tomorrow, or I'll get emails overnight about it when you hear that. But no, it really, really happened. Remember Hitler used to put a Star of David on everybody's lapel? Remember that? Everybody's. I repeat, everybody's. Jews, Gentiles, Muslims, atheists, Baptists, Anabaptists, Church of Christ, Methodists, Lutherans, Buddhists, Hindus, Jain, Animists. Everybody had to wear a Star of David, and Hitler put it on their lapel. Remember that? Same thing. Truly, it is an inspiration to begin drinking. Can't smoke a cigarette, you can't smoke a cigar, you can't do anything. Can't take up knitting? No. Can't do that. Can't do the Sunday crossword puzzle? Can't do that. Can't do anything. And I gotta put a huge sticker on my buildings. You know, because he's got three houses on Baltic and a hotel on Oriental, right? Huge! Huge! It's a giant sticker! It's a huge sticker! You know what? I've seen the sticker. It's about 4 inches square. And yeah, it's a purple, it's a white circle with a red circle around it and a slash and a cigarette image in the middle. Yeah, no smoking. This is brought to you by the government. Because they're meddling. Well, bless their hearts, the Anti-Defamation League said this is a profound insult to the memory of those that were tortured and killed, murdered by Adolf Hitler in the Holocaust. And you know what? He's right. They're right. But John Racey doesn't care. Because, you know, just like that bishop in Wheeling is now being persecuted because he has been issued a subpoena to appear in a federal court trial in Philadelphia, that's persecution. Asking a right-winger to obey the law of the United States of America, a state, or any political subdivision thereof, is persecution. You know, it is April the 19th. And thus, it is a day worth remembering. Goodness me, Politico asked John Racey if the Hitler comparison was a misstatement on his part, because, you know, when they get caught out, Republicans say things like, I was taken out of context, or I misspoke, or I misstated. Oh, miss! And he said, no, this is not a standard line, nor a misstatement. It is a loss of freedom. Because putting a sticker on your door glass is the same. Yeah,
It is the same as being stuck in a railroad car with 100 other people so that you can't so much as turn around, and riding on that for a week or 2 weeks and living in your own excrement and being unloaded into the camp, stripped of all of your belongings, including any gold that may be in your teeth, and sent off to the ovens to be murdered. It's the same thing. Because, see, John Racy doubled down. As Ronald Reagan once said, there is no such thing as partial freedom. There is only freedom. And John Racy ain't got none. Now, granted, he is as free as several millions or tens of millions or perhaps hundreds of millions or maybe $1 billion can make you, but he ain't free. Because he's been sent off to the ovens and he's wearing a Star of David on his lapel because he can't smoke in his own damn buildings. This is assault on freedom's what it is. But no, what I said is true. It is the 19th. And it is a day we dare not forget. And here on April the 19th, 2012, 17 years after Timothy McVeigh, using the same explosives that are used to the tune of about 3 to 5 million pounds a day in southern West Virginia, attacked a building that had a daycare center in it because he hated the government. And he didn't feel like he was free. A 168 people died. 680 people were injured. He made it abundantly clear why it was that he did that, Timothy McVeigh. He said he hated the federal government. He said that he was opposed to gun control laws. And by extension, I suppose, explosive control laws as well. And he said he was angry at the Federal Bureau of Investigation for the way that the standoff at the Waco, Texas compound of the Branch Davidians turned out. And here's the part that'll sober you up in a sure enough hurry. It's on the rise. On the 19th day of April, 2012, there are more right-wing extremists, there are more right-wing hate groups, there are more Timothy McVeighs in the United States of America. There have been more attacks by right-wing extremists in America than there had been before. Of all the attacks, all the assaults, all the upheavals that have taken place in those 17 years, only the tiniest fraction of them have been perpetrated by Muslims, by anyone you could arguably call a liberal. The vast, vast, damn near uncountable majority of them have been perpetrated by God-fearing, upstanding, Christian, do you hear the quotation marks? Terrorists who were as white as a bar of Castile soap. And tomorrow, indeed, is Hitler's birthday. How about it, John Racy? Can you send out a happy birthday wish, or is that what that was in the first place? Kind of was. Wasn't it? So, somehow or another, we got through 3 hours of radio, even though I'm, and this is a highly technical term, plum whooped. I reckon I'll be going shortly to bed and be maybe a little sharper tomorrow evening for Friday on the front porch. But thank you all for joining in. It was sincerely appreciated, and thank you for your patience during my recent and several recent absences. Thank you, of course, for your continuing kindness of your contributions. We have bills to pay tomorrow, and we badly need to get up beyond the halfway mark in order to pay them. You can see where we are by going to headonradionetwork.com and looking at the little bar graph widget. You'll also see the PayPal button. Any help you can give is sincerely appreciated. Thanks to everybody who gives of your time, your energy, your thoughts to this little effort, who joins in conversation, converse, collegiality, common cause. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Susan and Gene, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go there. Learn about Coal River Mountain Watch's work. Learn why they are the heroes I say they are. Sign up for the newsletter. Maybe get yourself one of the coolest t-shirts in the United States. Save the endangered hillbilly. CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Just a little bit more than a minute past the hour, didn't pass 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. Available to you via a multiplicity of platforms, including but not limited to the Horn's very own website, headonradionetwork.com, as well as iTunes Radio, as well as podcasting, as well as Stitcher Radio, as well as Tuner Internet Radio, as well as TuneIn Radio. And I think we're on most internet radio.